What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Renegade Marquee on the Renegade Pop Culture Podcast Network. My name is Mike. I'll be your host for this evening. Joining me, we've got the streaming demon, Jacob.
What's up, y'all?
We've got Teresa.
Hey.
We've got Tyler.
Hello.
And joining us once again, we've got Matt.
Life found a way.
And making her Renegade Pop Culture debut, please welcome Danielle Soulsman, or Soulsy at the movies.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Today, we are talking about Jurassic World Dominion, one of the biggest blockbusters of 2022. But before we get too deep into this movie, I want to kind of get a feel for where everyone stands on the franchise as a whole. Soulsy, I'll start with you. Your overall thoughts on the Jurassic Park franchise?
Well, one, I'm not doing what I do without Jurassic Park being released in 1993. And two, I mean, it was so great to see Grant, Sattler, and Malcolm together again. I mean, for me, this is one of my favorite films in the entire franchise.
Nice. Matt, what about you?
Funny story for me. My introduction to Jurassic Park was actually the ride at Universal. I rode it before ever seeing the movies. And I have to be honest, I was in seventh grade and the ride freaked me out. So I kind of swore off seeing the movies. But then something in me when we got home from our vacation just made me want to see, okay, what was this movie about? And I just remembered like being blown away by the movie. Like I still remember almost falling out of my chair when the Mr. Hammond, I think we're back in business and the Raptor comes out. And then I watched, at that point, there were only the trilogy was the only thing out. And I just watched the movies over and over again. I love the whole franchise. The first Jurassic Park is in my top five favorite films of all time. So this series means a lot to me.
Nice. Tyler, what about you?
You know, I remember the first time I saw the original Jurassic Park. I believe it was after I was dragged to see Jurassic Park 3 at the grand old age of 3 at a drive-in movie theater where I proceeded to freak out because I was a 3-year-old watching giant dinosaurs. At 4 years old, they thought, oh, you can handle the T-Rex in Jurassic Park 1. Nope! For the longest time, for about 10 years, I could barely watch that paddock scene breaking out. Honestly, it's still a little tense. But anyway, original movie is an absolute masterpiece and one of the best Spielberg movies of the 1990s, which is impressive when you put it next to Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan. Everything else I have varying degrees of love, hate, to hate, hate.
And we'll definitely get into that a little bit more. Teresa, your relationship with Jurassic Park?
I love it. It's one of my first franchises. I would say that it was one of the rewards for having honor roll, although the honor roll barrier was very low. So basically, if you just passed your classes, you could go to the movies. So we went to see Jurassic Park, and then I also had my slumber party go to Jurassic Park. So I was very intense into it in the theater. I also worked at the movie theater when the third one came out, which was extremely busy, at the one of the first multiplexes in my little suburb of Houston. So I'm very familiar how popular it is. I definitely, you know, the new trilogy caught my attention. Not as good as the first one, but I like the ride. I want to see more dinosaurs on my screen. So I'm happy that we had more films.
Nice. Jacob, what about you?
I saw Jurassic Park when I was, like, for the first time, like, 11 or 12. Like, that was when my love for Spielberg and my appreciation for him as a filmmaker really hit its peak. To this day, the first one is right up there among my favorite blockbuster movies ever. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, period, because it is just such a perfect balance between character and action, and it's thought provoking. It's fun. It's a Hollywood blockbuster movie with actual brains behind it, which can't really be said for much of the successors and really in any way. But I think like if you are willing to accept the fact that none of them are going to capture the lightning in a bottle that was the first movie and just see them purely as fun action flicks. I think you can have a good time. Like, I kind of have a soft spot for Jurassic Park 3 because you get the feeling that Joe Johnston knew that he just could not replicate that. So he just made a short, breezy, fun little dinosaur movie. And there are some good moments in that as well. The Jurassic World franchise, like Jurassic World, I actually thought was pretty good. I thought Jurassic World was a nice tribute to the original. Like, it knew how to deliver people what they wanted while still having certain thrills of its own. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom just felt like a big downgrade for me, but we'll get more into what I think about Jurassic World Dominion in a minute. All I can say is, great movie, great original movie, can't really say the same without any of the other ones, although they do have some degree of good qualities.
All right. So I'll be honest, as much as I watched like parts of the original trilogy on cable growing up, I never actually saw Jurassic Park for the first time until it was re-released back in 2013 when it had its big 3D re-release. That was the first time I actually saw it in theaters, and that's kind of the first time I fully started to appreciate just how incredible that movie was. Like, what a big deal it was, like, in terms of visual effects and just like Spielberg's blockbuster sensibilities at their peak, at least at that time. I'm one of those Jurassic Park fans who can find at least something to appreciate in all of the films, like from Lost World to pretty much everything in the Jurassic World trilogy. And I'm probably one of the only like dozens of people who think that Fallen Kingdom is the second or third best in the Jurassic Park franchise. Although, to be perfectly honest, I'd actually say that the Netflix animated series Camp Cretaceous probably belongs in that top three. But we'll talk about more on that in a future Renegade Animation podcast. For now, let's get right into the meat of the discussion. So, Jurassic World Dominion, directed by Colin Trevorrow, which he co-wrote with Emily Carmichael. This takes place 4 years after Isla Nublar was destroyed, and the dinosaurs now live and hunt alongside humans all over the world. This fragile balance will reshape the future and determine once and for all whether human beings are to remain the apex predators on a planet they now share with history's most fearsome creatures. I wish that was the synopsis of this movie.
I'm like, what movie did you see?
Because that did not mention the locusts at any point. Which I gotta say is not something I expected to be a major part of a Jurassic Park movie. But Matt, I'll start with you. Your general thoughts on Dominion?
Yeah, I love this movie. It depends. Like, yeah, the locusts were in the trailer. I didn't think of them being as big a part of the movie, but I actually wasn't bothered with that by a couple things. One, they are prehistoric creatures, just like dinosaurs. So them being brought back makes sense. Yeah, I really love this movie. Me and Mike talked about this like the day after it came out a bit. I have to see it again, obviously, but this might be my favorite in the series since the original. I had such a great time with it. It was great seeing the original trio come back and actually have stuff to do with the plot, not just, oh, hey, there's Alan Grant for 5 seconds. There's Elliot Sadler. Oh, hi, Ian Malcolm, in a post-credit scene. And yeah, the entire experience, I think it married both series really, really well. It followed up on things from Fallen Kingdom that I think people were hoping it would. And I also kind of, people are complaining about, they're like, oh, the dinosaurs aren't like that big of a deal. They are, but I also think that what I kind of like about this movie is that it's been a number of years since the final scene of Fallen Kingdom. And like, we as humans, we live with like killer animals every day. Like, you know, people can go on like safaris that could be attacked by rhinos, you know, like, so it's not the weirdest thing that we're like, okay, dinosaurs down, we need to watch out for them, but like, we're not going to lock ourselves in our house because of it. So I like that. And I just have to keep going back, seeing that original trio back, and particularly Alan Grant, like his whole story with Ellie in this movie, I really loved a lot.
It was just really nice to see them together again. Now on the opposite spectrum, Tyler, your thoughts?
Oh boy, it's going to be hard to not just randomly throw in tons and tons of Ian Malcolm quotes at this, but they've put so much effort into what they think they could do that they didn't think about what they should do. This movie. Like, a movie with giant dinosaurs should not be described as dreadfully dull and also now the Bourne supremacy for 15 minutes.
To be fair, I think the stuff in Malta is probably some of my favorite scenes in the film. Particularly
the opposite. I thought it was an edited mess. And also a weird rehash of the previous movie, same subplot about smuggling dinosaurs. That's the other thing, this movie feels like it's cannibalizing itself. I feel like I've seen all this before in the last two movies, let alone the previous five.
Speaking of the last movie, there is a particular subplot that we'll address later, but for now, Teresa, what'd you think of Dominion?
I thought it was fun. I can take it in as kind of, you know, just a monster movie, giving me my dinosaur fix. Honestly, it had more plot than I expected. But so I kind of was like, wow, we still haven't figured this out. Like, I can't believe we're still going. But I did have fun for the ride. I love the new character, the pilot lady. I thought we definitely needed some new blood, you know, while we return to our old faves from the original film. I did also enjoy the Malta scene because I just like the idea of like, what would it look like if there was like a bazaar of dinosaurs and how it can go horribly, horribly wrong. As soon as that one guy got eaten, I was like, that is exactly what was gonna happen. And I love a good dinosaur eating, you know, of the bad guys, of course.
Of course.
I was like, not the good guys. But no, I thought it was fun. It didn't, I actually was like, you know, a little worried it was going to drag too long. But by the time we got to the end, I was like, yeah, it was time to wrap up. I liked how, you know, called back to the ending, the dinosaurs fighting, like, you know, classic. It was a little bit of a rehash, but I didn't expect much more.
There is kind of a formula to a Jurassic Park movie. You kind of have to end with the T-Rex beating up other dinos.
Exactly.
Jacob, what about you?
Are you guys sure that Colin Trevorrow didn't direct Rise of Skywalker? Because it's ironic because I did get kind of those vibes watching that movie.
Honestly, I wouldn't even say Rise of Skywalker. This reminded me that he wrote Book of Henry.
Yeah, that was, say what you will about the quality, at least you can't say it wasn't original.
Yeah, so anyway, honestly, this was just kind of dull. Like, it was just kind of, I agree with you, Tyler, it was just so, like, with all this potential about dinosaurs roaming the Earth for the first time, I was really hoping we'd actually see more of humans learning to coexist with dinosaurs. And we don't get this until, like, the bookends of the movie, at the very beginning, the very end, where it ending was a cool shot. And it was a cool, like, montage of final shots.
Which is also what Fallen Kingdom did.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, something tells me we did not have to see an entire movie just to get the point that current Earth species, like humans and animals and dinosaurs, can coexist together. Something about this movie, it just felt so played out. Like, it just felt like there's no sense of wonder. Like, that's the thing that made the first movie work so well. That sense of just awe and wonder. And Jurassic World even had a kind of a bit of that. And Jurassic Park 3 and The Lost World, they had that too. This is just constantly escaping the dinosaurs and making sure you don't get killed by them. And it just feels breathless a lot of times. Although I did like, I liked the scene through Malta. That was a nice chase sequence. I liked watching, I liked Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum back, but, and then, like, they're, I didn't feel like they were given any meaningful arcs to speak of, really. It just, honestly, it was just 2 hours of, 2 hours, like, fan service and just nothing else, really. Although, there were some moments I did actually like that we'll get into later.
Oh, yeah, there is a lot more, that we have to discuss. Soulzy, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of fun stuff in this. And for me, like the fan service, I mean, that's one of the things that really makes the film for me. I mean, you go back to the Star Wars sequels in every single film. Obviously, Carrie's death had to be written in. But did they have to kill off Luke Skywalker? Did they have to kill off Han Solo? And see, in this film, the deaths you get in this film are the ones that are earned. I mean, with Wu, it's arguable that maybe they could have killed him off. I don't know. But still, I mean, and then bringing Dodgson back, that was the one that I don't think I saw coming until that first trailer, whenever it was I read what character that Campbell Scott was going to be playing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing how Camp Cretaceous ties into that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So Camp Cretaceous has one more season, and it's going to be interesting to see how they tie up that series. So I think out of everyone here, Matt and I are probably the highest. Like the three of us, Soulzy, Matt, and I are probably the ones who enjoyed this movie the most. And pretty much what I said in my original Letterboxd review is, you know, I know this movie isn't going to be anywhere near the level of the original Jurassic Park, but I still had fun. I still had fun where it counts. I enjoyed seeing the old cast and the new cast joining forces. The new characters, especially DaWanda Wise as Kayla Watts and Ramsey, played by I don't know if I'm gonna say this name right. Mamoudou Atti. These were great additions to the cast. And while I'm not the biggest fan of the character of Lewis Dodgson, I do think Campbell Scott was I could tell he kind of had fun in the role as like kind of playing the evil Tim Cook. So let's get a little bit more into the story. I guess we'll address the locust in the room first. Jacob, your thoughts on the locusts as part of the main story thread?
Like, I don't know. Like, I guess like, it is cool that they are acknowledging that dinosaurs weren't the only creatures from prehistoric times, I suppose. But the thing is, like, they have such a big focus in this movie. It's just, like, honestly, like, I would really have loved to see more of the dinosaurs in there. Like, just, there's another thing. It doesn't help, like, Dodgson, I didn't even realize that it was Lewis Dodgson from the original. Like, I didn't, like, part of the reason why, though, I should mention, we should probably mention the reason why I didn't recognize him is that in this movie, Campbell Scott replaces, in Jurassic Park, he was played by Cameron Thor, but he's been convicted for some really bad stuff, you know, that I'm not going to get into, but
he's still in prison, last I checked, so
yeah, so, available. Yeah, I'm not going to get into why, and, you know, but Campbell Scott, like, he was just, like, the biggest part for me was that Dodgson in this, he was just so boring, I felt, like, he's just, like, a basic, generic, evil, like, I'm doing this because I'm evil, shit, like, it just, like, nothing about this move, like, it just kind of really strips away the wonder and excitement that made that one so good. Like John Hammond, even though he was, like, the antagonist of it, like, he had the purest heart when he was doing what he was doing. Like, it was really a testament to what a great actor Richard Attenborough was, that he could play such, you know, a guy who has, you know, such good intentions, like, even when he's doing everything wrong, like he's just so charming and likable in this. And here, like, there's no real nuance to anything, except the closest thing I got is Henry B.D. Wong being back, you know, and that's big, like, the only thing that's nuanced about him is that he works for, you know, Biosyn, like, in, like, he's the closest they have to a nuanced character, and it just, like, everything, it just feels so, like, none of the character, I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent here, because the question was about Locust, but anyway, Locust, yeah, like, they've been more interesting, like, if they weren't so overplayed, is all I can really say.
I see. Matt, your rebuttal?
Rebuttal? I wouldn't really say this is a debate, but in the discussion point, I think the whole thing with the Locust is we are introduced to the character Louis Dotson in the first movie, and what's he doing? He's paying Dennis Nedry to perform industrial espionage. So this man is not above finding ways to make sure that his company has everything it needs. So that whole scene when Ellie goes to the farm and sees that it's not even the Biosyn seed, yeah, of course they would do that. And again, I like the fact that I think they wanted to change it up a little bit. Obviously, Jurassic Park, it's a series about dinosaurs. The dinosaurs are in this, but I think the fact that, like, yeah, there were other animals, and that was kind of established in the first movie, not with animals, but with plants. The fact that Ellie points out how there's all these prehistoric plants. So even since the first movie, they've been cloning and bringing back non-dinosaur creatures. So did I expect it to be from the trailer? Did I expect it to be such a main plot point? No, but for what it was, I actually thought it was pretty good. I don't know why I just did like it's pretty good. I did like a Larry David right there for some reason. I don't know why.
I actually forgot about that point in the original where they were, you know.
That's why Nedry does what people forget that. Nedry does that because Biosyn is paying him to steal the embryos. If Biosyn never...
Well, they don't say that in the movie. That's from the book. And that's anyone who thinks that it's a terrible company name, it is. But that's from the original Crichton book, so take it up with him.
It's in the movie.
Really?
The guy.
They don't explicitly say Biosyn is the company. They just kind of leave that name part out, but it's still the same thing from the book. It's fine.
Yeah, but it's interesting to think that, like, had Dotson never, you know, reached out to Nedry, like, nothing that went wrong in the first movie would have went wrong, you know? Yeah, like,
that's true.
It's literally because Dotson went to Nedry and was like, hey, we're going to give you all this money to steal these embryos. So he's always been kind of, in a way, he's been the main antagonist.
Yeah.
The first movie, and we also, it's not super focused on, but in Jurassic World, Biosyn is mentioned in it, because InGen is more just like they're more just like the security thing, but Henry Wu, I have to go back and watch Jurassic World again where they mention it, but Biosyn and Henry Wu have been working together probably, I would figure, since John Hammond passed away, which I know Camp Cretaceous they talked about when he passed away. So
yeah, this is part of the reason why I have to go back and kind of rewatch everything. I unfortunately didn't have time to do that this week, but there are so many like little details that you end up missing the further away you get from the previous installments.
Well, it's also a series that has, not including this one, 5 entries, and they're no, like, except for the third movie, they're all like 2-hour long movies. So I wouldn't blame you, Mike, to remember every single plot point and every single little offhand comment from them.
This one was 146 minutes. That's not short.
No, yeah. It isn't.
Makes me kind of appreciate the relative short length of Jurassic Park 3.
It really does.
I'm actually
one of, maybe not enthusiastic defender, but I'll defend that third one as it knows what it is. It's not aiming to be anything more than what it is.
I said in my Twitter review, it's like a drive-by Jurassic Park movie. It's like, okay, here's the wonder scene. Here's the scary scene. Here's Alan Grant saying something. Okay, and the movie's done.
Pretty much.
Well, a lot of the problem with Jurassic Park 3 is they went into shooting with a script that was not complete. Yeah, they had a script for the film, and they threw it out with maybe 6 weeks before production. So they bring on a new screenwriter, and of course, that close to the start of principal photography, you're writing around the models that you already have completed.
Yeah, they pulled an Alien 3 which is surprising since we all know how Alien 3's theatrical cut turned out like that. So
yeah,
it's not a complete failure.
A lot of movies, I'm realizing, actually do start shooting without a completed script.
Although Gladiator did it as well, and Gladiator is one of my favorite movies. So, but I feel like Gladiator is like it's the one that is the exception to the rule. I feel like most times you start shooting without a script and you start writing a script around pre-built sets.
Just like Gladiator, Jurassic Park 4 sat in development hell for about 15 years, and the script was insane.
Yeah, but at least there's a reason for Jurassic Park 4. There's no reason for Gladiator 2.
I mentioned that because like if anyone's ever not read the script for Gladiator 2, please read it and then proceed not to just laugh that someone actually wrote this and thought someone's going to pick this up.
Tyler, I don't think I could do that to myself. I might cry.
Wait, you don't know about Gladiator 2?
Oh, I know about it, but I don't want to acknowledge it.
God, that trailer's such a cluster screw.
So Jurassic Park.
yeah, getting back to Dominion. Solzy, what did you think of the locust plot? Because that is probably one of the most controversial aspects of this film.
Well, I mean, it was definitely a twist that I did not see coming. I mean, I only watched the first trailer. Was there a second full trailer?
I think there might have been.
I mean, aside from the trailers, like, I stayed away from all the spots. I stayed away from all the press interviews. So I was going in knowing only what I saw in the trailer. And, of course, that was full of classic misdirection. But, yeah, I mean, it was an interesting twist. And the fact that it helped get everyone together in the same place.
I think ultimately that's why I'm okay with it. I think I would prefer maybe, like, a different approach to getting the A team and the B team together. But the second time I saw this movie, I think I accepted the locust plot a little bit more. Teresa, your thoughts on the locusts?
Well, first off, locusts freaked me the hell out. So I thought it was very intense, especially that first scene with the little kids on the farm. I was like, wait, whoa, like we're getting dark here already in the first like couple 30 minutes of the film. I didn't expect it to be like an actual like thorough plot point, but I thought it was logical that it would bring Ellie back to like in the fold, getting Dr. Grant. Like I felt like it made sense. I also feel like the film was really trying to comment on like climate change, and especially really lead into like that final scene of like dinosaurs are among us and we have to accept it and we have to live with nature and all that. So I feel like it made sense in terms of what the film wanted to say about the world we live in now, especially with crops and, you know, people talking about GMOs and things like that. So I really could see how a screener was like, yeah, this is how we're going to get people to care and not just want, you know, like monster deaths. But I will say that when they start the forest fire, I was like, okay, these locusts have got to go. This is like, we can't get rid of them. And that is when but then that is when you get all three characters back again and they up the action. So it's almost like they distract you again. They're running from dinosaurs. So, you know, it brought me back into the fold really quickly.
Yeah. I'll say like pretty much the entire back half of this movie, I thought worked so much better because you got like the two teams working together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just other than the Malta scene in the first half, this is like when I was having the most fun.
Definitely, for sure. From like plane crash on, I was like, yeah, let's do
it. Tyler, your thoughts on the locusts?
Why is it every movie since Jurassic World we have to weaponize something that was extinct? They do that in every one of these world movies, and this is just the most blatant example. The evil corporation trained the locusts to destroy everything that is not their property. Oh, come on.
I will admit, as much as I'm a defender of the World Trilogy, I have said ever since the first Jurassic Park that at the end of the day, the main antagonist should really just be the dinosaurs. because you're not going to top you're not going to top John Hammond or Nedry or even I guess Dodson, his specific role in the first film. Seriously, I think the dinosaurs would be enough of a threat without human interference.
Yes. Also, do we also need to make everything a world-altering catastrophe? Because that was the great thing about Jurassic Park 1. What happens if we don't get out of this island? Oh, nothing. It's just like 15 people die. It's a very personal stake. This one, oh my gosh, the world's gonna run out of crops. Everyone's gonna die if we don't. We don't need this level of stakes in a Jurassic Park movie. We don't.
Mike, I that is a fairly good point, Tyler. And I think that's just like a movies. It's like, why did Fast and the Furious go from a series about characters stealing DVD players to go into space? You just got to keep up in the ante and the 2010s and the 2020s, I guess. But Mike, I think I talked to you about this on Twitter. I think the reason why there's always a human villain element is because, unlike, say, Jaws, since the first movie, the dinosaurs, for the most part, are treated as animals. There's the line in the lunch scene when Ellie says, these dinosaurs don't know what century they're in, and they'll react violently if necessary. I think they're animals. And so they're doing things. Yes, the raptors at the end of the movie are targeting the villains. And the only movie to where the dinosaurs are the villains is Jurassic Park 3. And, you know, and so I think that's why, is because they've always been like the T-Rex attacking the Jeeps in the first movie. That's because that T-Rex has only been fed goats and maybe some other stuff. And he breaks out, and the first thing he sees, he doesn't know what a car is or what humans. He looks at that as, what is that? Can I kill that? Can I eat that? I want to eat that because I'm hungry for something that's not a goat. Because if you see in the rest of the movie, like the Gallimimus scene, he has no interest in going after the humans at the end of the movie. He wants to kill the raptors. I apologize. She wants to kill the raptors. And then even like with the Indominus Rex, Owen points out in the movie that the Indominus Rex is killing the other animals because she's trying to figure out where she lays on the chart. Like, that's why she's killing in that movie, not because she's evil and everything. It's because she was raised in captivity, didn't know anything else, and is now out and is like, okay, where do I lie here? So I think that's why the human element, and you can argue the degrees, like, personally, my favorite villain in the series, and it's really just personal preferences, I like Peter Ludlow from the second movie. I think he's so smarmy and annoying. I love seeing him get his comeuppance at the end when he tries to steal the baby Rex back.
Book, the Peter Ludlow character is literally the Lewis Dodgen character in characterization, appearance, and even fate.
Have you ever heard that story that apparently Steven Spielberg ran into Dodson's actor in an elevator, and he was like, you know, Dodson's got a pretty big part in the Lost World book, and then he just, I guess Steven Spielberg just had really good foresight, and was like, let's create Peter Ludlow.
Although, the greatest insult I've ever heard about the franchise comes from Michael Crichton himself, because if you actually bought a copy of The Lost World, and like they had like a little preface, it's just him apologizing for writing, is going, look, if you're wondering why I'm making this movie, it's because Steven Spielberg drove a drum truck full of money into my house and I just couldn't say no.
My favorite part of the Lost World book is the fact that it's so heavily inspired by the first movie, because Ian Malcolm dies at the end of the first book and then he's magically alive and is the main character. Yeah. Because everybody loved Ian Malcolm in the movie. So
because
Michael
money.
Was
that
like,
is literally.
Did Hammond die in that book too, or wasn't he?
Yeah,
Hammond died. Actually, a lot of the character fates are kind of reversed. Like the scummy lawyer character and the gamekeeper live. Hammond dies. Malcolm dies. Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Didn't something similar happen with the book sequel to Forrest Gump?
Well, that's even a weird example, because that's just the guy wrote up sequel to spite the movie so that it never can be made into a sequel.
Yeah.
But Crichton, he's just like, oh, I'll play ball, Spielberg. Just put got me a big paycheck and I'll write a sequel.
Look, Michael
just...
Crichton didn't quite get the ER money yet at that point. You know, nope. ER was just starting, so he was like, okay, I'll write a sequel book.
Yeah, he did not write a third one or a fourth one. He was content with just two.
I honestly like both of the books, so... I quite liked the Lost World
book. The books are interesting. Like, although I think the original movie, I think, is better than the first book. But I think the first book is still very interesting.
My dad read the first book. He thought it was really good. He actually recommended I read it. I haven't yet, but I will eventually.
The thing that the first movie does that improves upon the book is, and this is the thing about Michael Crichton's writing, is these human characters are always like the worst people in the world.
Yep.
Like, oh. Who want to die. And Steven Spielberg was like, David, can we change that to, like, you know, like, Hammond's more like Walt Disney and Alan Grant's not like a complete jerk. Can we do that?
Yeah, and also the kids are not literally like 9-year-olds going, I don't like this.
Yeah. Oh God, the kids in the first book, you're like,
yeah, you want them to get eaten.
I know. Although,
I will say it's a great shame that they scrapped the scene where Muldoon gets drunk and pulls out a rocket launcher and blows up a raptor. That would have been kind of fun.
But they did rocket launch a raptor in Jurassic World to make up for it.
Yeah, they did that. That's true. But he wasn't drunk.
That we know of. We don't know who fired that rocket.
That's true. We do.
But going back to The Lost World, I was watching the bonus feature documentaries for Jurassic Park, and Spielberg, it was either for Jurassic Park or Lost World, it was one of the two, and Spielberg was saying that he kept that long focus in on the Biosyn can getting all that mud pouring on it. Spielberg was saying that his main focus of the sequel initially was going to be about the Barbasol can.
Yeah, and then Michael Crichton wrote the sequel novel with this whole second island, and so he changed his mind, which actually, if you want to know what happens to that, although I guess now that's not canon anymore, but the Tall Tale game.
I was going to say, the Telltale game kind of did that.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if that... Well, I guess with how... No, I guess... No, with depending on which ending, because it's one of those games where you...
Oh, you know the canon ending's a good ending.
Yeah, well, we know the can's making its return in Camp Cretaceous Season 5.
I've not watched Camp Cretaceous. Is it...
I've seen the first two seasons, and it's honestly really good, and part of the reason why is because children are the main protagonists. I think the kids from the first movie are part of the reason why it works as well as it does. And speaking of children, I think now's a good time to talk about Maisie.
Oh yeah, so I'm about to get to the favorite subject of possible child murder.
Well, also just really quick before we talk about Maisie, I am so surprised that they did not work a Tim and Lex cameo into this movie. I was really shocked.
I'm sure they asked, but I'm pretty sure the actress who plays Lex is literally just like I read she's just an artist now. She does not
act. She is. I think, but Joseph.
He does.
Joseph was in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes, he's still acts. He's really also surprised. In the fourth season of the show Justified. He's still an actor. I know that.
Yeah, I'm really surprised because they came back for their little cameo in Lost World. So I'm surprised if they were asked that they wouldn't have come back, because that would have been a fun little just like, oh hey, look, it's Tim and Lex.
Yeah, that actually, if they were here, that would have added something to it. You know, that would have brought that childlike wonder, like that this movie desperately needed.
But then also, I want to see Tim as a paleontologist. Like, they brought back characters from Jurassic World. They brought back characters from The Fallen Kingdom at one point. Like, yeah, getting a lot of characters here.
I really do appreciate that they brought back Omar Sy's character, because he was one of my favorites from World.
Well, and that a lot of that had to do with the fact that Jake Johnson just wasn't available.
Mm.
He was doing another series at the time that they were shooting, and then of course the pandemic happened, and he just didn't have time in his schedule. That's why when you go through that photo of who's working as informants and stuff, you see Jake, you see Lauren, and then you see Omar. I mean, a lot of that really had to do with scheduling.
Wow. Yeah, I'm happy they brought back Omar, because I loved Owen and his like friendship in that first movie. So it was cool to see them sort of back again, and sort of, I love the whole thing to where he's like, okay, you guys can listen in, but you're not allowed to come and do anything, even though he knows that Owen and Claire are going to get involved
somehow
into it.
But I want to say that Colin, in an interview with, I think it was either Variety or Hollywood Reporter, went into the details about why Tim and Lex didn't get brought back. I want to.
Okay. I haven't looked into it. It was just more, I was just like, since we were talking about kids, I was like, huh, I'm surprised. But I'll definitely read that article.
Now, speaking of kids, if you've ever read the original Jurassic Park, Michael Crichton, does he not like kids? he also very much enjoys having them horribly massacred, which is something that never happens in these movies.
Ooh.
Like, yeah, there's a scene in, like, I think it's actually the beginning chapter where, like, a velociraptor, like, gets on a ship and ends up in a hospital, and it goes through a maternity ward. Insert, what do you think's going to happen? And it does.
Jesus.
Yeah, it gets really dark. That's in the first book. Obviously, Spielberg cut that for every reasonable reason.
Obviously. But getting back to Maisie, Solzia, I'll start with you. What did you think of the reveal of her actual backstory as opposed to what we know about her post Fallen Kingdom?
Well, I mean, she really is Lockwood's granddaughter, but
that
not
she is.
The way we initially thought. I mean, we thought that she was cloned because his daughter had died. No, yeah, that's another one that, I mean, it was a nice twist and also adds more into the science and then get into this whole subplot of Sadler actually knowing Maisie's mother. Like, I would have never predicted that Maisie's mom was this great scientist in her own right.
I would have liked to see that explored a little bit more. You know, maybe have Charlotte and Maisie be a more prominent character from, like, the start of the trilogy. But at least I can appreciate this movie giving Maisie a little bit more to do compared to
besides get hundreds of people killed.
Exactly.
Like, I'm sorry, I will never get over that ending of the second one where she just presses the button. Oh, they like me. They have to live. It's like, you little brat. How many people did you think just get violently murdered because of your actions?
So Tyler, I guess I'll go to you next. How do you like Maisie in this movie compared to Fallen Kingdom?
I feel like they Rise of Skywalker this, where they just watched everyone react to how they. I'm going to assume a lot of people were at best mixed with, we have human cloning now in the series, yay. So they just retwisted it backwards, kind of.
It's Rey is Palpatine's granddaughter all over again.
It really kind of was, where it's like, I feel like that you just wrote that in just because, you know, people didn't like that the last time. And at this point, why? Also, that character is just the character is getting old and maybe might get kidnapped. I wonder if this will be a major plot point for the movie and she'll actually have a character. Yeah, it goes exactly about where I expect that to go. She's a plot device in the same way that, well, Rey's parentage was kind of a plot device.
I don't think I'll ever get over the whole Rey is a Palpatine plot.
Nope.
It's one of the reasons I haven't really gone back to Rise of Skywalker. Exactly. But Teresa, your thoughts on Maisie in this movie and her actual origin story.
It was like trying to remember Fallen Kingdom. I'm like, is this lining up? And then I was like, it probably isn't, but I'm just gonna go with it. And once I just kind of accepted it, I was like, okay, so her mom was the scientist and she just wanted to save the world. I was like, okay, it's heartwarming. I'm on board. I did think it was weird that Henry Wu was the one telling her the truth, but maybe that was to make it more, you know, emotional punch. But I did enjoy seeing her reaction to her mom on the videos because that's her arc. She's looking for her family. She's accepting that she already has one. You know, that's what people, you know, from that kind of adoption story, she doesn't know where she fits. Not just because she's a clone, but because she doesn't know her parents and had a weird upbringing. So I thought it was really sweet. And I thought the actress did a really good job.
Yeah. I really like the actress who played, Maisie. Let me see.
Isabella Sermon.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I thought she did a nice job in this movie. Now Matt, your thoughts?
So I liked Maisie in this movie. I liked the whole beginning thing with her and Owen and Claire, to where they've sort of adopted her and, you know, they're trying to keep her safe. And of course, like any teenager, she's told not to do something. So of course she does it. But I really love that beginning scene with her riding her bike into the town and going to the sort of lumber yard and seeing the Brontosaurus. I thought that was a really beautiful scene. And then I like that whole little family dynamic, the sort of like Claire's the bad cop and Owen's the good cop. But at the end of the day, she still is like, you guys aren't my parents. Like, what am I? And they did retcon it because I did watch Fallen Kingdom the night before I watched Dominion. And in that movie, the villain of the movie pretty much says that, what was James Cromwell's character's name? I can't remember.
Benjamin Lockwood.
Lockwood. He pretty much infers that, like, Lockwood's daughter died. He couldn't take it, so he cloned her. But in a similar vein to what Rise of Skywalker did, they're able to get around it to where it's like, well, the bad guy said it, so how believable can it be? But I thought it was a fun retcon or change. I liked that whole thing that, you know, Maisie's mom was a scientist and she was doing this to sort of help the world, you know, that whole thing that, like, she had this disease and she wanted to find a way to sort of cure it. And yeah, I mean, sure, Maisie getting kidnapped, like, of course, we know that's what's going to happen. But, I mean, it's also like, you know, when you watch the first Jurassic Park movie, of course, you know, the dinosaurs are going to break out, because why would anyone make a movie to where it's just like, hey, Alan Grant and Ellie Sattler come to this island and the tour goes perfectly fine and they sign off on the park. But, like, why would we watch a movie to where it's like, yeah, of course something has gone wrong and it leads to all the Malta stuff and everything else. And, you know, and that scene when she's watching her mom on the video screen, like, I got pretty choked up. I was like, you know, because she, and then realizing by the end of the movie that she does have this family, that Owen and Claire are her parents and they're going to take care of her and everything. It's really sweet.
Yeah, it was actually really nice seeing those scenes with Charlotte. Like, especially the second time I saw this, I think that first like flashback scene where she's giving Maisie the like the injection, like that really got to me. And I'm ultimately happy with her arc by the end of the film, that she's accepted her sort of new parents as her family. Now, speaking of new characters,
I didn't get to describe what I thought of it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jake.
It's okay. So it was a nice scene. The borrow from Teresa, I actually did. It was sweet on the surface. You know, there is I do think it was a retcon. Like, I'm still not really sure why she was told that she was a clone in Fallen Kingdom. I'm not exactly sure. Like, it did kind of feel like a twist. It just felt like kind of a contrived reason as to why she would free the dinosaurs, because, oh, they're just like me, they're caged. And yeah, so it just kind of, yeah, but it was a nicely done scene. There is this inherent beauty, I think, of a woman conceiving like asexually, like that she, like, using her own DNA, like, as a way, like, it's not exactly cloning, like, it's like something. There is a sort of poetry to that scene that it's just, to me, you know, it didn't really factor. It was just kind of like a moment that it doesn't factor that much into the rest of the movie. It only factors into like that's what Dobson wants to use her DNA for, or sorry, Wu wants to use her DNA, like, to eradicate the locusts. But honestly, I didn't think it registered that much. It was kind of just a standalone scene to me. Like, it didn't feel like it had as much of an impact on the plot as I thought it should have. Okay, carry on, Mike.
Anyway, speaking of new characters, I can't get over how great DaWanda Wise is as Kayla Watts, who we meet kind of formally in the Malta scene, where she's kind of, she's the one who ultimately does decide to help Owen and Claire rescue Maisie from Biosyn. But just her introduction, I thought, was awesome. Like, pretty much in like the first 10 seconds, you know pretty much everything you need to about this character. Matt, your thoughts on Kayla?
I thought she was a really good addition to the series. I like how her intro scene, you know, she's helping to smuggle the dinosaurs, and she sees Maisie, and she kind of thinks that something's up about it, but she's like, ah, I don't care. I, I'm getting paid, whatever. And when Claire and her are having the scene where Claire is trying to be like, have you seen this girl? Like, can you help me? And she's like, just get out of here. This is no place for you to be. Of course, she kind of has the arc to where she starts helping them. I like the little connective moment between her and Owen after they crashed, to where she's talking about how, like, her and her mom were in the Air Force and Owen was in the Navy. So there is that sort of respect I think she has for Owen. They're like, oh, okay, you're a military person too. And she does end up helping them at the end of the day. Yeah, I think it's a shame she was introduced so late into the series. But I hope that if they sort of start a new Jurassic trilogy, that she can be brought back in some shape or form.
I mean, this movie is successful enough that they could probably announce a new trilogy within the next couple years. Tyler, your thoughts on Kayla?
That'll be the one of the things I do agree with. I think she was one of the better characters in this movie, and I wish she was in more of it, or at least not introduced in this movie.
I am kind of curious how she would have fit in with like the previous entries. Maybe she could have like been helping out at the theme park with Owen and
I mean, you could have introduced her in Fallen Kingdom in kind of a Roland kind of like role, the Pete Postlewaite character, to where she's sort of hired to help InGen sort of take the dinosaurs to the mansion earth. And you could have introduced her that way.
Actually, yeah, that's actually not a bad idea. Soulsy, your thoughts on Kayla?
I mean, she's like this cool Indiana Jones character.
Actually, yeah, that's a pretty nice comparison. She definitely has that like coolness vibe to her.
Except she knows how to fly a plane, not just not like Indy.
In fact, when you watch the scene again, look at the underground market, and there will be a fedora lying around.
Actually, I got the impression that they were actually riffing on Indiana Jones, because later we see Alan, like, he actually wears that. He's carrying the torch when they're in the catacombs of Biosyn, and like, and there's a part where he drops his hat, and Ellie says, "Forget the hat!" Like, that was kind of like, "No, you're not Indiana Jones."
That was a funny moment. Teresa, your thoughts on Kayla?
Oh yeah, she's my lady. I love her. I love how basically she, like, she didn't really know what was going on with her guest on the plane, but she was like, if that guy doesn't get on the plane right now, I mean, we're just gonna go. So I thought that was great. I love that whole sequence in the Malta scene where she was just like, yeah, there's dinosaurs chasing us. I'm ready. Obviously, it's good to have a pilot when you're on an isolated area that might blow up and that is suffering from forest fires from locusts. So I thought that was very handy, but I definitely think she brought a good balance to groups. It wasn't, you know, it really brought new blood literally to the film, and just seeing it from a different light. She's been out here in the real world trying to make ends meet, maybe doing something questionable. But in the end, she has a good heart, and she knows who to help.
Yeah, her arc is actually a really good one.
Also, I think everyone's saying Indiana Jones. I honestly think a character she has better relation to is Malcolm Reynolds from Firefly. You know, the guy running the scams and using his ship to sort of, you know, maybe illegally smuggle stuff, but has a heart of gold underneath and will help people when the time calls for it.
I thought for a second you were going to say Han Solo, and that still wouldn't be wrong.
I mean, okay, Malcolm Reynolds, Han Solo, they're
pretty similar characters when you get down to it.
Yeah, they're all kind of cut from the same cloth.
One's quippier. Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
There's a lot more we could talk about.
Okay, but my turn again.
Sorry, Jake.
It's okay. Honestly, I have a feeling that Kayla should have been the main character from the get-go, from Jurassic World. She has this spirit in her that she has 10 times more charisma than any of, like, Chris Pratt or Bryce Dallas Howard's characters. She just has this natural likability. She has, like, she brought something to this movie that I thought would have been sorely missing without her. I just wish that it focused more on her and that she wasn't introduced so late. That's really all I have to say about her.
I would love to see if they do end up making like a new trilogy or maybe like a spin-off series on Peacock or something, what that would look like with Kayla's character like front and center.
Honestly, I honestly think they even tease, like, when she says to Owen, I can see why you like Claire. I like redheads too. Like, that kind of hints, like, you know what? They should have been a couple. Like, Kayla and Claire, that should have been a couple. Like she has more chemistry in that scene alone with Bryce Dallas Howard than Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard have in any movies. I never bought their chemistry and the Jurassic World movies.
I have to mention this, which is the fact that the movie keeps arguing humans and dinosaurs can just live in peace and harmony. No, I'm going to side with me and Malcolm so much in, from the previous movie going, nah, just let them all die. They're horrible abominations that are not actually related to anything scientific. They don't look like real dinosaurs at all. And they're also technically invasive species that are just going to just take out other animals in their environment. Kind of similar to like the cane toads in Australia.
Oh yeah, because Australia has a lot of dangerous wildlife.
Yes, it has a lot of invasive species that are not meant to be there, and because of that, absolutely destroy the environment. This is something that the original movie understood, but I think every movie since understood it less and less up until this point, where it's now apparently a positive.
Speaking of Ian Malcolm, he brings a lot of levity to.
Did they give him the script in this movie? Honest question, I couldn't tell.
I don't think it matters
it's like he's riffing on his own movie. Like, I just have low standards. I like money. Yeah, I know you do.
Especially when he kind of remarks about Jurassic World. Not a fan.
Because he wasn't in that one.
No, I didn't get paid for that one.
Nope. So favorite moments other than the Malta scene and I guess the. Like the control center scene in the second half. Jacob, I'll start with you. Your favorite moments in the movie?
Honestly, the Malta scene. Malta scene is my favorite by default. I liked the parts where there was no score in the background that added to the intensity of it. I also liked the brief snippets of the escape scene, even though the fight with the T-Rex and the Pyroraptor. What was the thing? No, it was the Gigantosaurus, and
which is a real dinosaur. They didn't clone something on that one. That's a real thing. I didn't actually know.
That honestly, T-Rex fights just don't really excite me anymore.
This was a rehash of the ending of Jurassic World, which I'll honestly admit was very, very entertaining. In a
yes, that made the whole movie.
It kind of did.
The only thing, this movie kind of suffers from a lack of real memorable deaths. Like, the closest thing it had was at the black market where you had that poacher, but we don't even see that. Honestly, the two best deaths I can think of in any Jurassic Park movie are the scene where the lawyer is sitting on the toilet in the first movie. Also, though, the most memorable one has to be the one in Jurassic World where that lady just picked up by the
I was going to put a vote in for Jurassic Park The Lost World, where there's actually quite a few amusing ones. Like,
by the pterodons, like, she's picked up with the pterodons, and then she gets freaking eaten by that.
What's it called?
On the stores. Like, that's what makes that a particularly memorable death is that, unlike other dinosaur kills, it didn't chew her up like usual. Like, it swallowed her whole.
So that was probably one of the meanest deaths for a character that didn't really even deserve it.
Yeah, that was like, that's even worse, like, than if you're chewed off, because that means that she was digested while she was alive.
Yeah, that was my only complaint with Jurassic World, really. I was like, what was that?
Yeah
but with Lost World, anyway, I got eaten by two T-Rexes and like a wishbone and he snapped in half. Otherwise, nice.
Even Dodson's death in the originals, that kind of debate, we've seen it before, where the lights go on and off and the dinosaur and the velociraptors come and eat him, and like
those were actually Dilophosaurs, so they were directly doing the Dennis Nedry thing.
Velociraptor, sorry. So Anyway, which, yeah,
in fact, he's old. In fact, he's also injured. It's also kind of a callback to how John Hamm gets eaten in the original movie. Although those were the copies, but that death was also reused in Jurassic Park 2. So, you know, everything's been done.
Yeah. So, yeah, not too many. Like, honestly, the Malta scene was really obviously the highlight for me. And also parts where when Jeff Goldblum's trying to, like, unlock the game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, first that, you think that was another 1984. One. Like, first you think it's 1984, and someone else's birthday, like, and later, and there's like, holy crap, it worked. Like, I don't know what it was that he typed in, but, like, or, like, it was someone else. It was that other guy, that scientist that was there that opened it for them. But,
oh, yeah, Ramsey kind of sneakily helping him out.
Yeah, Ramsey, yeah.
Matt, your favorite scenes other than the Malta scene?
Yeah, I have a few. I love the opening Owen's intro scene where they're sort of cattling all the, I don't know the names of the dinosaurs, but I love that because I'm like, yes, that is, in this world, that is the only job that Owen Grady could have is being a dinosaur wrangler. so I really love that. I liked, I mentioned before, the scene when Maisie gets on her bike and rides into the town and the Brontosaurus is in the lumberyard. I think that's a really great scene. And it's just the music and the visuals. There's really no dialogue. Other scenes, I like the scene when Ellie visits Alan at his site. And he sort of is kind of fumbling over himself, and he sort of grabs the picture that he has hanging up of them and tries to hide it. And then he asks about her husband, and then when she says that they're divorced, like, he doesn't want to show how happy he is, so he has to sort of hide it. And then along with that, when they finally kiss at the end, I was so, because that was always one of my big issues with Jurassic Park 3. I'm like, the whole part of Alan's arc is the fact that he's finally able by the end of that movie to start a family with Ellie. And then they're just like, oh no, here's this other dude she married. So finally seeing them get together was great. And yeah, Jeff Goldblum was great throughout, you know, the entire thing. I especially like, where they kind of tease that he might die, but then he just throws the fire into the dinosaur's mouth, and
that was
awesome. So yeah, so really, I like this sort of intro stuff with Owen and Maisie, and then really a lot of stuff to do with the trio, you know, in this movie, because that, for as much as I love the Jurassic World characters, like, you know, getting to see, like, Alan Grant come back, like, also that scene when he's trying to explain, like, how cool, like, these discoveries are and everything, the two, like, teenage girls are just, like, on their phones and care less, I thought that was great. So yeah, so those are some of my favorite moments. I mean, and obviously the motorcycle chase was really cool.
Yeah.
Too, but Mike said I wasn't able to mention them all the stuff.
like it's because of the original trilogy that I love a lot of what happens in the back half of the film.
Just mention really quick, a moment that I love so much is they worked in a way to have the T-Rex become the logo. I thought that was really funny. I loved that. I was like, because I was wearing my Jurassic Park shirt, I was like, oh my god, they worked that into this movie. That is awesome.
I love how that's like the first time that they've ever done that. And, you know, it is obviously cheesy, but it's cheesy in a way that just kind of works. Yeah, I don't know why, but things like little Easter eggs like that always seem to I'm just always an easy mark for little stuff like that. Now, Tyler, are there any scenes outside of the Malta scene that stood out to you?
I will agree that I like that they retconned the weird choice in Jurassic Park 3 to have Alan Grant not end up in a relationship with Ellie Sattler. That never stuck well with me because they had good chemistry in the original film, and that looked like they were going with it. And then, nope, didn't work out. Just got married to some loser schlub that you never think about. That was a weird choice in the third movie. Glad they retconned that. That's about it. I like seeing actors get paid that I liked. It was always good seeing Jeff Goldblum in anything.
That is true. Anytime you get to see him on screen, it is a blessing. Now, yeah. was there any reason why Ellie and Alan's relationship just was nothing? Was it because Laura Dern wasn't available for Jurassic Park 3 outside of like
Jurassic Park 3? They never really
it was.
No, they do not at all mention why, and I've never seen a production note why.
I honestly, my whole thing about that is I think because at the end of the movie the Marines come in and save them, and that's because they mention at the beginning that Ellie's husband is working with the State Department. I literally think they broke them up because they're like, oh, we need someone to be able to get them out. But I'm just like, why not just say that's Ellie's brother who's visiting them and works for like the State Department?
Like literally there you go. A sentence rewrite.
Really easy. I fixed the movie. But no, so whatever. That's always annoyed me.
Or, you know, you could just say, hey, look, here's this beloved paleontologist guy, U.S. government help.
I want to see that. He should have been eaten by a dinosaur.
Like, the U.S. government will go out of their way to help you if you're, like, anybody stuck in another country, no matter what profession you are. They will help a paleontologist with world-renowned notice. Come on.
Yeah, I think that was just a suffering of the whole thing that they completely rewrote the script, and they reached out to Laura Dern and said, you want to be in this movie? Script. And they said, sure, and they didn't even think about it. So,
they fixed it in this movie.
It's fixed now, guys. It's fixed, so who cares? We could just watch Jurassic Park 3 and be like, yeah, we know that it all works out, so who cares?
Although they never talk about that kid that she had.
They do, because he talks about both of her kids, and she's like, they're good, they're both in college now, so Charlie and her other son do get a mention early on.
I must have missed that. Well, at least he's never going to bring up the time that, oh, by the way, I almost got your future husband killed because of Barney.
Yeah. You know what? That's that one of my favorite jokes in Jurassic Park 3, though.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm being killed by irony.
The position of Barney and the Spinosaurus attacking the boat.
Yeah. You know, that's another example of the movie knows what it is. It knows it's complete corny schlock, and it's
just into it. Although Barney is much scarier than any T-Rex in the Jurassic Park movies.
Ooh, yeah, that is true.
Mm-hmm, the paddock scene in the first movie stands the reason.
Solzy, any other scenes that stand out other than the Malta scene and Jeff Goldblum unlocking the gates?
I think her internet's kind of the messenger. She says, "My internet's strangely just disconnected."
Oh no!
Oh, yeah, I hate when that happens. All right, Teresa, I'll go to you next.
Say the magic word.
You know, and I'll respect him for not having that line show up in the movie.
For sure. I would say, I guess I really like the lake plane crash scene. I thought that was like a lot of tension. I was actually like almost scared for the characters, because I was like, I have no idea where you are in the mountains. I just know you're in Italy. Like, how far are you from the compound? So I thought that was like a really good way to kick off the action for like the last third part of the movie. And then I would say, after Malta, it's really just, you know, learning more about Biosim and like the, you know, I love an Easter egg. When Dodson grabs the shaving can, I was like, yeah, that's right. It's you. Really putting it back together. The friend that I watched it with, he didn't understand who Dodson was. What I was like trying to be like, you know Dodson. And he was like, no, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Your friend should have immediately answered, nobody cares.
Yeah. He was just like, I just want to watch the movie. But then at the end, he was like, oh, I get it. When I saw the shaving can, and I was like, and he died by the same dinosaurs. Like, it's a whole full circle. He's like, only you would know that. So obviously, because he knows I'm a big Jurassic Park nerd. But I thought those were my nice scenes.
The other thing that would have made that shaving can cooler is that they somehow got Wayne Knight's blood on it.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Solzy, so favorite moments other than the Malta scene and Jeff Goldblum unlocking the gates.
I mean, there's a lot of favorite moments. Now, outside of those, I mean, you've got Malcolm taking out the torch, and you think it's going to be a rehash of what happened in Jurassic Park, but no, he's learned from that. And then, I mean, getting to see Dodson killed by the Dilophosaurus, that is classic karma in action. It goes around, comes around.
Hell yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think about us because, I mean, there's like a lot of that second half. I mean, just seeing both groups working together, it's just so much fun. That I mean, I can't really figure out which would be the favorite because it's like that entire hour and a half is so enjoyable.
Yeah, I agree.
Being, Sattler and Grant finally kiss each other.
Oh, it is the first time they kiss. I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
that's, I think that's why it's just so satisfying to see it like, what, like 30 years later?
Yeah, they had a scene where they kissed at the dick sign in the first movie, but it got cut, so.
Oh, and one more moment. When you think that T-Rex is down and out, no, she's not. She's coming right back after you.
Yeah. I kind of make up for the part in Jurassic Park 3 where the T-Rex gets killed.
Yeah, but that was already rectified in Jurassic World. They even straight up had the T-Rex crash through a Spinosaurus skeleton before fighting the Indominus Rex. That was at least a thematic thing.
I have to say, talking about the two groups coming together, a favorite little moment of mine is both Alan and Owen at the same time saying, don't move. I thought that was a great little, I thought that was just a fun little thing. And also when Alan is talking to Maisie about the raptors and how they like attack from the sides and everything, you have to watch the sides. But he's learned talking to kids about raptors. You don't try to, you know, just destroy their entire lives when talking about how the raptors are going to kill you.
Yeah, you have to handle this with care. And I think that is one of my favorite moments. Seeing Alan, Maisie, and Owen like pretty much taking care of Beta, making sure, you know, she's under control. And I know it's been in the trailers, but when Malcolm's like, is that a baby baby raptor strapped to your back? Oh, and just like, yeah, why? Little moments like that make me laugh.
You made a promise to a dinosaur?
You made a promise to a dinosaur.
Of course, obviously, especially when it's so cute but deadly.
Yeah, that's the thing. Blue, I've always been a fan of Blue and her family. They're kind of like that perfect middle ground between like cute and dangerous because, you know, they're dinosaurs.
I would have liked to see an animated short film with them, like with no dialogue.
But yeah, that would be pretty cute.
I mean, one nice thing about watching Camp Cretaceous, at least when they're on Nublar, is getting the moments to see Blue in action, or just Blue getting a drink of water at the watering hole that you don't really see after that first movie.
You know, speaking of things and dinosaurs, I just reminded me, remember when this movie had like a 15-minute like short film introduction that was just dinosaurs before the apocalypse?
Are you talking about the like the IMAX exclusive preview?
I'm about that was billed as like the intro for the movie at certain intervals.
See, I don't live near an IMAX, so I'm honestly extremely jealous of people who saw that like in theaters.
I don't go to the IMAX because they're so freaking expensive unless it was a movie that was shot in IMAX. I think, although I did see Belle, Mamoru Hosoda's recent film in IMAX, that was a freaking religious experience.
I think the last IMAX movie I saw was maybe Dunkirk. It has been a while since I've seen anything in IMAX, but they put the thing on YouTube, the whole like first 15 minutes. Yeah,
I thought it was like 5 minutes.
Yeah, I don't remember how long it was. All I know is interesting choice. Definitely would have added more to the runtime. That would have been a bad choice. Also, it doesn't really add up to anything. Not really. Just here's dinosaurs. It's cute.
Yeah, that's probably why they decided to cut it, because they're just like, it's not really necessary. Yeah,
You're short. I hated IMAX as a kid at first because it was so friggin' loud. And, you know, as an autistic kid, I was really sensitive to loud noises. But, like, it was a fun. I saw The Lion King when that was released in IMAX 2002 with my family. And out of that, it was like some, like, Lewis and Clark documentary from, it was like one of those short, like, nature documentaries or something. But I didn't go back to the movies IMAX for a while, and then when I saw like Deathly Hallows Part 2 in IMAX, like, oh wow, I've been really missing. Like, it's not overly loud for me now anymore at all. And I freaking love IMAX.
The prologue is 5.5 minutes. And my understanding is it's just a prologue and it was never going to be with the film. In fact, on Letterboxd, they even had this as a separate film altogether for Collins' filmography.
Huh. And what's interesting.
The point then, if it was never made to be the intro of the movie, it's just 5.5 minutes of dinosaurs interacting in a more or less reasonable manner, then why is that not just like a bonus feature?
Yeah, I mean, it'll probably be on the bonus features.
I'm sure, it will
maybe
be.
Like, Battle of Big Rock will be on the bonus features too. And I did like how they incorporated that footage into the film.
Yeah, that was actually pretty cool seeing a little bit of Battle at Big Rock during the like the Now This News intro.
I also like how they mention Isla Sorna, Site B in this movie, because that was always the thing in Jurassic World and Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom was they never mentioned Site B, and you're just like, did Jurassic Park 3 and Lost World not happen? But no, they clearly established that no, Isla Sorna happened. They went and they got the dinosaurs from there, which was nice. I'm glad that they didn't just say that two of the movies in the original trilogy weren't canon or something.
Yeah, I think that's what I appreciate about Dominion is while some of the execution could have been a little bit better, at least like they acknowledge that everything that's happened before still counts and is canon.
Yeah, it was definitely nice that for a movie that is supposed to be the end of sort of this sort of cycle of the series, it was nice that they made sure that like things that maybe were a little murky if they were canon or if they were being referenced, they made it clear that like, nope, this stuff did happen. It was nice because I had someone who may not dress Part 3, but I really like The Lost World. It was nice to know. But that does raise a question for me, which is, where is Sarah Harding? Did her name break up? Why was she not referenced?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about her.
Because the actress in question probably asked for way too much money.
Yeah, but you could have had a line to where, like, Ellie's like, and where's Sarah? And she's like, oh, she didn't want to be anywhere near these dinosaurs, you know? There you go. Come on, Colin. You could have done it. You could have thrown a bowl.
He could have gone further, and he could have made the cargo pilot, the friggin' like daughter that does the gymnastics. He could have made it worse.
Oh yeah, Jeff Goldblum's daughter.
Ellie.
Yeah.
Oh no, I was half expecting her to be a daughter of Dr. Arnold.
They could have done that too. Oh, that would have been so
terrible. I honestly, part of me was like, would they do that? But then
there was. I remember when Jurassic World came out, there was this theory that Owen was that kid in the first Jurassic Park movie. It was like, that does look so scary. This looks like a 6-foot turkey. And he's the one that Alan just terrorizes with that claw.
I hated that theory. I didn't like that. I was like, no.
Yeah.
They establish why he's there. You don't need to do that, guys.
Yeah, not really the biggest fan of like, this random nobody character is like a main protagonist all along.
Yeah.
So as we're kind of winding down this episode, I have two more questions. One is, do you think we will see more Jurassic films in the future? Number two is, do you want to see more Jurassic films in the future? Solzy, I'll start with you.
Well, I mean, they've made it clear this is the end of the Jurassic era. So if there are
there's still
films,
a Cretaceous era.
Yeah, I mean, they could do Triassic, they could do Cretaceous. I mean, if there are more films, I'll certainly see them. It wouldn't be the same without the legacy cast or any of this cast, but we're just going to have to see what happens. I mean, I'm still hoping they bring Chris Evans back as Captain America.
Yeah.
But that's another conversation.
Of course. Tyler, what about you?
No, I've heard every horror franchise ever say we're going to end. None of them ever have. This will not end. I looked at the box office total. It's made plenty of money. I know how this works. There will be more of these. I have no interest in having any more of these. Frankly, I've reached the point where I genuinely would probably look back and say, you know, was this, did this need to even be a franchise in the same way did Terminator need to be a franchise? That's my take.
I'm still even considering whether or not that deserved to be a franchise, but that's a topic for another day. Matt, what about you?
Do I think they're going to do something else, like, you know, Cretaceous, you know, period stuff or Jurassic? Probably. I mean, not even just because, I mean, this movie's made a ton of money, but also just like, you know, the series just as a whole since 1993 has been kind of like a money machine. So why not? And, you know, who knows? I mean, I remember when I first heard that, you know, there was going to be a Jurassic Park 4, but none of the original cast were going to come back. I was a little, is that going to work? But then I saw the first movie and I loved, you know, Owen and Claire and all that. So it's possible. Do I want to see it? I think kind of like Jurassic World. I think I have to sort of wait to see what idea they have. And if it interests me, then yeah, I'll go and check it out. And if not, then, I mean, maybe I won't. I mean, I probably will check out the first movie. But it'll be interesting to see sort of a series that I'm not sure if, like, it would have any relation to, like, InGen or BIOS. And maybe they'll wait, like, years later and some new group will come in and try to bring back dinosaurs again. I don't know.
I think they'll probably have to wait, like, a minimum of 5 to 10 years before even thinking about restarting this again.
Yeah, I'm thinking more 10 years because I feel like in 5 years, you know, I think it's more 10 years. They're gonna wait and then they're gonna be like, "Hey guys, guess what? New Jurassic were, you know." And
will
then
there be actual feathers on the animals this time?
Probably, and then they're gonna have to remodel the ride at the Universal Parks all over again to be based off.
I'm not
of
gonna
all
get into
dinosaurs.
The paleontological opinion of this, because I did watch a video amusingly from a paleontologist that saw it and walked away in kind of disgust. I just paraphrase, this was not particularly accurate to the dinosaurs of real life.
Well,
without its use of it 30 years ago.
To quote Alan Grant from Jurassic Park 3, what John Hammond and InGen did was create genetically engineered theme park monsters, nothing more and nothing less.
Yeah, you see, this franchise is giving you the best quote to throw back at itself. Like, you know, there's the other great one of this entire franchise can be summed up as, you stood on the backs of giants, and before you knew it, you just slapped it on a lunchbox.
Yep. Is there a Jurassic World Dominion lunchbox? Because
come on. You know there has to be one.
I didn't get the popcorn tin, so can I get a lunchbox? Honestly, though, if there was a t-shirt of the sort of like promo image they were using as standees at AMC theaters, I would probably buy that shirt.
Same. Now, Jacob, the two questions. Do you think there will be more Jurassic films after this? And would you like to see more?
Yeah, I think there'll definitely be some more. It's funny, like, the idea, like, we could have a legacy sequel with Chris Pratt as Howard. That's kind of scary once you think about it. Like, there could be a legacy sequel with these characters. It really depends on what they do with it. Like, maybe an interesting idea, like, I could have, like, maybe just like a slice of life movie about a family with a pet dinosaur or something, or something that kind of like looks at, you know, different perspectives all around the world of, you know, mingling with dinosaurs. Like, I'm kind of done with these high octane action movies. I think there is some factor, like, there is an intelligent way to explore this concept. And I think the only real way to do that now is just to forego, like, all the action and, like, all the, I think that's a bit more interesting to just have that slice of life approach.
Or maybe like a mockumentary.
Long ago, the intellectual part of the franchise.
Yeah. Teresa, what about you?
Absolutely, yes, they're going to do it. I just feel like the numbers don't lie. Will I watch it? I will absolutely watch it. I would probably be more suspicious of something new, since I know that this is supposed to kind of really close the book on a thing. I'm thinking maybe it would have to be like a prequel or something like that, to bring some freshmen, or like going, I don't know, like 20 years in the future, seeing what the dinosaurs like have wreaked havoc on the world. Clearly, I don't trust humans to coexist with dinosaurs, honestly, on any level, especially after just seeing what happens with the poachers and things like that. So we'll see what happens.
I that's actually not a bad idea, like a prequel. It would certainly be something different. I could see like a 6-episode limited series about, you know, the early years of Jurassic Park. Maybe we see more of
No, you're prequelizing it now.
Peter Christensen plays young John Hammond.
Oh God.
And then they'll have David Attenborough as old man dying John Hammond flashing backwards.
Oh, that's right.
Oh my David. God. Wait, it starts like Citizen Kane with the Amber Kane.
Yeah, there you go.
Boom, and then we just flash back to John Hammond. It starts off way. With the flea circus and everything. Oh, guys, come on. We got,
oh, God, what have I done?
You listening? We got your pitch right here. Give us
a bunch
there of
money. You go. you mean, like, this young British actor who, nondescript person, would be like, yeah. He's gonna go to the flea market and see like the fleas, and he's gonna buy a straw hat, and everyone's gonna go, oh my God, it's young John Hammond, and you hear the Jurassic Park theme in the background, and then
yes,
it's gonna
there's
cut
that forward. Moment like Ewan McGregor for that when he picks up the hat and puts it on for the first time. The
Indiana Jones though, yeah.
All kidding aside, I have a feeling that Universal is going to do something with this franchise in again, maybe not right away, but probably something within 5 to 10 years, because if this movie makes like about as much as the previous two, then like you're gonna see something.
I don't think it will, because I think it's facing stiffer competition. I mean, what did Fallen Kingdom even really go up against?
Ant-Man and the Wasp, I remember.
That's
around the same
not
time.
Much, I'm going to be honest, even like for Marvel movies. This one still has to fight with Top Gun Maverick, which didn't drop that much, actually, this week. And there's Lightyear this week, too.
And you still have high transmission in areas that are preventing some people from going back to the theaters.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that, like, box office since theaters reopened in 2020, like, it's got to have an asterisk. I mean, you can't really compare it to the before times.
Yeah, we are in uncharted territory.
Yeah, I feel like the success of this movie is really going to be judged when it comes to, like, streaming and sort of, like, rent and everything because of that, because some people can't get out of the theaters. I feel like that's when Universal will start judging the success of this movie.
I'm really curious to see how it performs in its like second or third weekend, because if this drops any lower than like 60%, then they like the future of the franchise may be in question. But like 50 or above, then no, this is a bona fide hit. But we'll have to see. But yeah, that takes us to the end of this episode. I had a lot of fun talking about this movie, both positive and negative.
Yeah, me too.
Before we get out of here, Solzy, first of all, thank you for joining us. And where can everyone find you online?
Solzy@themovies.com. That's Solzy @themovies.com. I'm also Solzy at the Movies on Facebook and on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me at Danielle, SATM.
Awesome. And Matt, where can everyone find you?
You guys can find me at Kearns_Matthew on Twitter. The two YouTube channels I work on, Matt Movies 611, and Take Three Productions. On Take Three Productions, I host three shows, actually. One is called The Fandom Podcast. The other is a show I do with my friend Dave Flores called Simple Tricks and Nonsense. And then a video essay series I do called Second Look, which is all about movies that I love that I feel are either mostly hated or under-talked about. As Mike talked to me on Twitter earlier this week, I'm sure once Jurassic World Dominion hits Blu-ray and everything, I will probably be putting an episode out about it. So I guess look forward to that in several months.
Awesome. Tyler, where can everyone find you?
Well, you can just find me at Debunk File on YouTube. That's the main channel I still write for. That's main hub anyway.
And Teresa?
You can find me on all social channels at Teresa Electro.
And Jacob?
You can find me on Facebook under Joe Krehbiel, K-R-E-H-B-I-E-L. I'm also part of the Renegade Pop Culture Facebook group.
And you guys can find me on Twitter at CaptainK42. You can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. And you can find me in all the various Facebook groups just at my name. You can check out Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and Twitter at Ren Pop Culture. You can also find us on Podchaser and on the Banana Meter. And we also have our own YouTube channel. You can listen to all of our podcasts on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. And last but not least, everything can be found at renegadepopculture.com. Need an escape? So do we. That'll do it for this episode of Renegade Marquee. We will catch you guys later. Peace out.